From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, April 13th, 2017. And on this day, a stunning admission leads to a man who spent the last 27 years in prison to be freed on bail. Also, Maine's new ranked choice voting law is put through its paces in court. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, dedicated to serving injured and disabled Mainers from Kittery to Caribou, joebornstein.com, and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
Well, a man who served nearly three decades in prison for a murder in Portland was granted bail today due to new evidence that cast doubt on his guilt. An attorney for Anthony Sanborn Jr. argued before the Cumberland County Unified Criminal Court that a state prosecutor and two Portland police detectives mishandled the case. Patty White has more.
16-year-old Jessica Briggs was murdered in 1989 on the Maine State Pier. Her boyfriend at the time, 16-year-old Anthony Sanborn, was ultimately convicted of the crime and sentenced to 70 years in prison. Sanborn has maintained his innocence, and his current attorney, Amy Fairfield, now alleges that two Portland police detectives and Assistant Attorney General Pamela Ames withheld evidence in the case. Fairfield petitioned the court for a hearing to reverse Sanborn's conviction and to release him on bail while considering the case. That hearing happened Thursday, and when Sanborn entered the courtroom, the crowd of supporters erupted into applause. A key witness for the state in the original trial was Hope Cady, who was 13 at the time of the murder and testified that she saw Sanborn kill Briggs. Fairfield called Cady to the stand again, where she recanted her original testimony.
I'm going to take you back to 1989, okay? Specifically, May 23rd, 24th, 1989. Did you witness a murder down at the pier at the Casco Bay Lines here in Portland, Maine?
No.
You did not?
No.
Fairfield also revealed in the hearing that Cady had lifelong vision problems, which the state knew during the trial but did not disclose to the defense. Cady also testified that she felt threatened by Portland police detectives James Daniels and Daniel Young, who investigated the murder, and that they told her what to say during the trial. The state, meanwhile, represented by Assistant Attorney General Donald Maycumber, reiterated Cady's original testimony.
Just to be clear, in October of 1992, you testified to a jury sitting in that box from that chair that you did see Anthony Sanborn stab Jessica Briggs. Isn't that right?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
A caseworker who was Cady's guardian at the time of the original trial testified that she documented Cady's vision problems, as well as Cady's conflicting accounts of witnessing the murder. After questioning witnesses for 2 hours, defense attorney Amy Fairfield argued to Judge Joyce Wheeler that the new evidence cast doubt on Cady's original testimony and that Sanborn should be released on bail while considering further evidence in his case.
To keep this man in jail for 1 second longer just perpetuates this miscarriage of justice that has happened to this wonderful human being. He is deserving of bail. I would urge the court to admit him to bail right now, so this stops now.
After deliberating for about a half hour, Judge Wheeler did just that.
This is only a bail hearing, so I cannot apologize to you, Mr. Sanborn, at this time. All I can say is that there is a reasonable likelihood that you will succeed on the petition, and I am going to set bail.
Sanborn cried when he heard the news, and as he was later escorted to a bus to the Cumberland County Jail to wait to post bail, he told reporters that justice was being served. His wife of 5 years, Michelle Sanborn, who has worked to exonerate Sanborn for much longer, was shaking at the news.
I just want my life back. I just want all of our lives back. And I just thank Justice Wheeler for being a woman of compassion. and for doing the right thing and giving me faith in our system again.
Sanborn's mother, Helen Sanborn, says she always believed her son would one day come home, and she's proud of Anthony's accomplishments in prison, which include teaching reading, writing, and parenting classes to other inmates.
He's done good for all the people that was in there, and he's helped a lot of people out. I'm proud of him.
Though Sanborn was granted bail set at $25,000 in cash or surety bond, the case isn't over yet. A hearing is expected for the end of April, where Judge Wheeler will consider further evidence to determine whether to reverse Sanborn's conviction or order a new trial. Former prosecutor Pamela Ames is now in private practice and declined comment for this story through a member of her office staff. The Portland police detectives have filed affidavits denying the allegations against them. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Well, Maine's ranked choice voting law had its day in court today. The Maine Supreme Judicial Court, which heard oral arguments that could determine the fate of the citizen initiative passed by voters in November. The court's views on the constitutionality of the new law will likely influence legislators to either keep the first-in-the-nation system, ditch it altogether, or maybe try to amend the Constitution. Steve Missler has more.
The state Supreme Court has been asked to weigh several questions about ranked choice voting, including its constitutionality. But first and foremost, the court has to decide if it should opine at all. During oral arguments held in Augusta Thursday, Jamie Kilbreth, the attorney for the Committee on Ranked Choice Voting, says voters have settled the issue. Ranked choice voting is the law. That led to this exchange between Kilbreth and Chief Justice Lee Sofley.
This is a tail wagging the dog kind of problem. The other thing I'd say is with respect to what
Mr. Kilbreth, it's a fairly large tail, however.
It's a fairly large tail, yeah.
Large enough that the court's actions could shape future decisions by the legislature. If the court declares what's known as a solemn occasion, it will inevitably have to advise on the constitutionality of a law approved by voters. Kilbreth argued that opponents are using the court for political cover to kill the voter-approved law. But Assistant Attorney General Phyllis Gardner says the court's guidance is needed. The 2018 election looms, and she says if the constitutionality of ranked choice voting isn't resolved now, it could lead to chaos next year. Judge Joseph Jaber seemed to agree.
If we don't take any action now, there's definitely going to be a challenge after the next election.
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
So if we don't do anything, voters are not going to know how to vote because they don't know if it's going to be a plurality system or a ranked choice voting system.
Opponents of the law have raised two primary constitutional issues. Among them is whether a ranked choice system designed to produce a majority winner satisfies the constitutional requirement that winners are elected by a plurality, or the most votes. Attorney Joshua Dunlap says it doesn't. Dunlap represents the Maine Heritage Policy Center and the House Republican Caucus, two opponents of ranked choice. But when Dunlap attempted to argue his point, Chief Justice Sofley jumped in. Isn't this a question of simple math, she asked? If one achieves a majority, don't they also achieve a plurality? Dunlap conceded, sort of.
A majority is a plurality, Your Honor, yes.
But Dunlap went on to say that's only because of the way ballots are counted in ranked choice. Dunlap, the Office of Attorney General, and conservative groups say that the method blocks the first candidate who achieves a plurality from winning, and they argue that's not constitutional. If ranked choice stands, it would apply to legislative, gubernatorial, and congressional elections. That means that the Supreme Court opinion, if it gives one, could also affect the field of candidates for next year's governor's race and a U.S. Senate contest.
Hard to say how that plays out in people's calculus, but I think that people are going to be watching these proceedings pretty carefully.
Secretary of State Matt Dunlap says the system, in which voters rank their favorite candidates from first to last, is designed to give independent candidates and moderates a better chance of winning. With a few exceptions, he says, moderates and independents have not fared well in recent elections. And that includes two-time candidate for governor Elliot Cutler. Cutler narrowly lost to Governor Paul LePage in 2010. He later said he would have won if Maine had ranked choice. He came in third 4 years later, blaming his second loss on fear of the spoiler effect, an issue that ranked choice claims to resolve. Cutler has said he won't run a third time, but that was before voters chose ranked choice in November. The system could also influence LePage's potential challenge to independent U.S. Senator Angus King. University of Maine political science professor Mark Brewer says LePage would be a formidable candidate, especially if ranked choice is overturned.
A ranked choice voting system makes his road to victory more difficult, and I think it might change his calculus for sure.
But for now, all those calculations hinge on what the Supreme Court may or may not say about ranked choice voting. and the court has given no timetable for a decision. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And the Maine legislature is looking once again at a proposed ban on the use of handheld electronic devices while driving. Mal Leary has our report.
The legislation is sponsored by Wyndham Senator Bill Diamond, a Democrat and former Secretary of State. He says there's mounting evidence that the likelihood of having an accident increases if you're holding a cell phone to your ear or texting. Diamond told the legislature's Transportation Committee that while some people would ignore the law, its passage would make highways safer.
I think people, if this is the law in the state of Maine, I think people are going to follow it for the most part. There'll be a few, but I think most people will. And most people, I think that will result in much safer highway.
The bill, which would allow the use of hands-free devices, was endorsed by the Maine State Police. Major Chris Groton says it could help address the issue of distracted drivers, who account for 40% of all accidents in the state. That's more than 14,000 accidents a year. Groton says while current law bans texting while driving, it's difficult to enforce because an officer must be sure that the person is actually texting and not, say, dialing a phone number.
This is exactly the law the Maine law enforcement needs in order to be able to successfully enforce the anti-texting laws that are already on the books in Maine. The current statute is difficult and at times impossible to enforce.
The legislation also drew the support of AAA of Northern New England. Spokesman Pat Moody told the panel that after a decade of attempts, it's time to pass a ban on using electronic devices while driving.
Looking at the title of this, it would probably be more palatable if, or easier, if it said no selfies, no Snapchatting, no Facebook updates while driving. And I think that's what the essence of this bill is trying to get at.
No one testified against the bill, but some committee members who had opposed similar legislation in the past pointed out that allowing hands-free cell phone use would still be a distraction. The bill will now go to the full legislature later in the month. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for this Thursday, April 13th. Thanks to Ed Morin and Susan Sharon, who helped on the show, and our digital team. I'm Jennifer Mitchell.